Pickaxe.
Jetzt nur du, dein Podcast und eine leckere Auszeit. Ab zu Aldi Nord. Für 2,99 € bringst du deine Mittagspause mit Sushi ins Rollen. Lecker. Und für 1,99 € gönnst du dir danach noch eine kleine Eiszeit. Bei Aldi Nord findest du immer das Passende. Klingt gut? Dann probier die Snacktime Sushi Box ab 205 Gramm für nur 2,99 € oder Mucki Sandwich Eis je 8 Stück für nur 1,99 €. Das ist Gutes für alle zum Aldi-Preis. Jetzt in deiner Filiale. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the Triforce podcast.
Oh,
that's
right. We're back.
We continue to try to find strange outlets for our COVID lockdown and freezing cold weather shit.
Oh, it's a beautiful day today.
Man, it's beautiful here today. What are you talking about? It is sunny.
It is sunny, but I heard on the radio this morning.
Right.
Oh, well, Alexa told me in the news report, actually. That's my equivalent of radio.
Right.
She said that it's going to be a white Easter. Right.
Yeah.
So first of all, sad that it's getting cold again. But second thing, I don't know when Easter is. Isn't it the last
Sunday in March, or is it the last Sunday in April, or the first Sunday in April, or is it the
Tuesday
after Pentecostal Grunge Day?
A fucking floating holiday.
I don't know.
Do you reckon that's why they have the Easter egg hunt? Because you always have to fucking search for when Easter is.
I think it might be
a representation
Probably,
of that.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a kid, I don't know if this was the case for you guys, Easter was when I got chocolate in a large enough quantity that I felt secure. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, yeah. I've got enough chocolate now to last me a while. I've got like a stash. If it wasn't Easter or Christmas...
like a squirrel.
Right?
Yeah, like
a literally, this is my harvest now. We must look after
it. Or a 65-year-old man who's invested in a pension his whole life and is finally getting the payoff.
So for me, Easter was a big thing. And also, you had school holidays and stuff like that based around it. But now, if I want a big bar of chocolate, I just fucking go buy a big bar of chocolate.
Man, yeah, it's like a very common thing now, right? Like, I don't know if you've been to W.H. Smith recently, but
holy crap. What is it with,
like,
I mean...
the snaking chocolate queue that...
It's huge.
It's crazy. It's just like a sign of the times, I guess. People love chocolate.
What are you talking about? There's people in W.H. Smith buying chocolates.
Oh, my God. They've got to be the biggest confectionery retailer in the UK right now. Like,
a store
previously known for selling magazines and books and stationery is now competing with, like, massive grocery stores and everything for confectionery. Like, they sell so much chocolate. It's insane. And it's all because of the queues to get to the tills to pay. Are just lined with confectionery now. It's
probably
insane.
Their number one seller, in all honesty, other than back to school.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
It's wild.
Yeah.
It's wild.
I suppose you are right. It is the place that people pick up snacks for journeys. There's always them in the airports and the train stations.
Yeah.
And I guess for some people, chocolate is a little bit like cigarettes. You know, you need a chocolate bar to keep you going.
I honestly don't eat sweets that much. But what we do is we get... There's a brand of chocolate called Tony Chocolonely.
Right.
Oh, dear.
Let me tell you something.
Fuck me.
That doesn't sound like the brand of chocolate of somebody who doesn't eat sweets that often. That sounds really refined.
But let me tell you
right?
something.
That sounds like...
It's so good, dude. It is so fucking good. Like, Tony Chocolonely. The branding kind of makes it look like one of the Willy Wonka bars. In that it's big, and then the print is very bright colors, very big letters. We thought it was Tony Chocolonely, but it's Tony Chocolonely, which makes me think, is this for sad people? But it is honestly, I would recommend.
It's come up with by this guy apparently who thought he was the only person in the world who was opposed to child slavery and child labor. So he deliberately made a company to ensure that none of his chocolate used that. And this was in 2002, apparently. That's where the loan
back
comes
up a
from.
Minute there.
Yeah.
He thought he was the only person in the world who was opposed to that?
Yes, apparently. I guess in the chocolate industry, everyone is just so complacent and used to just ignoring the fact that there's horrible stuff. As most people are in business, you know, these guys in suits sat at the ivory tower, not the Ivory Coast. That's where the slavery's happening.
Big chocolate at it again.
Wouldn't you like to have an ivory tower?
Children, and then you got the little man, Tony Chocolonely, coming by.
Exactly.
And he just wants to make a difference. He just wants to save the kids.
Yep.
But Big Chocolate won't let him.
They
big
try chocolate. And they buy explicitly from farms that are not using exploitation.
How do they ensure? Do they call them up? Do you guys have any slave children there?
No slave children here.
Man, what about turning it on its head and actually singing from the rooftops that you are employing child labor? Like, why not put a couple of like sad looking kids on the chocolate bar and be like, these sad kids made this chocolate and stuff? Just embrace the illegality of the
Here's
whole
a
thing,
question.
Right?
You know the way they put right. that on cigarette packets, a picture of someone's lung falling out of their
yeah.
nose and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
If you put a picture of the sad slave people that made
yeah,
your
a kid
chocolate
like sewing
on
a
the
soccer
bar.
Ball with his bare hands and
right how many people would stop buying the chocolate?
Nobody.
Everyone.
No one would.
You buy a chocolate bar to make you feel happy. You buy a pack of cigarettes because you need those fuckers.
Yeah, but they
I mean?
Also make you happy. Yeah. I don't think you can compare the addiction that people have to nicotine to the addiction people have for chocolate. It's obviously different. But
yeah,
sugar
completely.
Addiction is a real thing. Your body craves it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people would still buy the chocolate. I don't think it would affect sales that much.
Well,
at all.
I don't think it's affected cigarette sales that much. And you can see these fucking diseased ass lungs and teeth and stuff. And they're still smoking.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's, you know.
I mean, if you talk to smokers, they collect them like
yeah,
playing
yeah.
cards, right?
Like football
like,
cards.
Oh, look, I've got emphysema.
I remember like even when I used to smoke in like the 90s when I was like in my sort of later teens, they had all of that stuff. And you used to get we didn't collect them because they're kind of gross, but you saw the gum disease ones and then like, you know, the diseased lung and the rotten teeth
yeah.
and everything. And I don't know. I mean, it didn't
bother you.
It wasn't a deterrent.
So I don't think it would make
Well, it doesn't bother you because when you are a certain age, you think you're invulnerable and you think you're immune. Anything you won't happen to you and you think you're immune to it. You know, I think that there's so many people go through life with this psychology.
Isn't
that
true?
That they're not part
your
of.
Whole
they're
life,
special
though?
Somehow, right?
I don't think that's unique to younger people. I mean, look at the people during a pandemic who are still traveling, still trying to go on holiday, still spreading a virus. You know what I mean? I think everybody carries that with them, or at least certain people do, where they're just like, this doesn't affect me. I've got my own rules. I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I like. You know, like, I think it's the same.
You are right. I think people are the center of their own universe. Yeah. And as a result, we can't help it just assuming that we feel like, oh, you know, other people get lung cancer. I'm not going to get lung cancer.
Yeah.
You know?
They did this thing over here where there was a couple of cases. We had a whole bunch of cases of COVID and we went into like another lockdown. The cases went right down. And but they were still finding every once in a while, like these sort of bursts of cases would come through. And they did like a, I think they basically followed up to see, they were interested to see in this particular case, how the spread happened. And without naming names, they just sort of like walked through, you know, the events that led to a bunch of people getting COVID. And the whole time it was like, person A went to a party attended by person B and person C. Person D later on got it and then went to a party where person E and you're just thinking, why are you going to a party during these times? what goes through your mind when you think that there's millions of people that have died from this and you're just going to a party all the same like you would have done before this broke out? It's crazy.
They had they had a big report on the news last night about people who just fucking didn't give a shit, met up, had these huge parties. It happened all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
mind-blowing, isn't it? I mean, you've had it, Flax. Like, you know that it's fucking terrible, right?
Well,
like
here's the thing. A few people have said to me, people don't listen, right? So, for example, a friend of mine said that they thought they already had COVID because they had a bit of a sniffle in March. So they think they're cool. They think they've had it.
Right.
And I said, well, you'll know when you've got it because you'll be sicker than you've ever been in your life. It's fucking horrible. And everybody's wading in the comments with, oh, no, it affects different people differently, actually. And I'm thinking that's become the thing, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That, oh, you can get it and not even know. So people just think, ah, who cares?
And then kind of ignored it. Why
are we taking such chances?
I don't know how you wade in with an opinion if you haven't had it in that context.
I mean, they are right. Some people, I mean, for instance, for some of the guys I play Dota with, one of them's had it, and he just lost his sense of taste and smell. He lasted for quite a while, but he wasn't like poorly otherwise. He had a bit of a croaky throat. He wasn't like bedridden like I was.
Right.
So it does affect different people differently. It's possible that this person had it, but all I'm saying is, why are we being so laissez-faire about it and saying, ah, well, some people it doesn't affect, you know, for older people especially, for people who are sick and don't even know it. A friend of mine died of it. He didn't have any health problems. He died. He was my age. So it does happen. Just don't take any fucking chances. Come on, guys. It's a global pandemic. Can we fucking just get on board with this, please? Jesus.
Sorry, but this was I'm really sorry to hear. That's crazy. This is just to reinforce the point that I think people continually throughout their lives believe that they're somehow invincible or somehow exempt from the rules that everybody else seems to have no problem following. And then, you know, going to a party or whatever, it just seems crazy to me.
Like, yeah. I think people have this power to self-justify. They hear one thing and they think that's probably what happened to me, and then that becomes the gospel in their head, and then everything they do is, you know, alleviate. No one goes through life constantly feeling, well, some people do, constantly feeling anxious and guilty about what they're doing, but those people don't tend to do that many bad things. You know, I think people who do bad things feel like they have to do them for a reason. Either it is to, you know, for something, maybe they want a new phone.
You know, it's funny, but my dad always used to say, when we were talking about, whenever I go to see him in the States, there's a lot of driving because it's America, right? So, you know, you're chatting and stuff like that. We were listening to the radio and there was some news thing about how the police had caught some guy with like 100 kilos of horse in his boot. You know, that's heroin, obviously, lad.
Yeah.
In his boot. And I was like, how dumb do you have to be to get pulled over by the police for like a busted taillight? Because it's always some shit like that. Like the guy's driving up from Mexico or wherever with all this heroin. And
right.
He gets busted because he's like, taillight's out. And then he's like, yeah, sure thing, officer. No other problems. I'll just be going. He's like, what's that in the back of your car there, sir? Huh?
Looks car's like a bit weighed down
a little powdery there,
son.
There, sir. You got a little unidentified powder coming up out of your car for some reason there in
hear,
the very far
I can
north
hear
now.
A light whinnying. There's a man coming from your boot there.
He's got a 100-kilogram horse in here.
He's got a bunch of live horses in his car.
But my dad was like, well, if you're going to break big laws, you're going to break the small ones too. So these guys who are willing to potentially spend the rest of their lives in jail to smuggle a load of drugs aren't going to be fucking signaling before a turn. They've already abandoned laws. They've opted out of the whole law thing.
I don't know,
in society.
Though. I feel like I would be even more careful. Like,
you would
like
think
if
that.
I was a cop, I'd be looking for extra cautious drivers.
Yeah, right. But you're not a criminal.
Those are the guys that are transporting all the horse.
No, we're just going riding. We're just going equestrianism with our horse. This is fully legal horse.
Senor, I am just moving my horse to the north. It's a little far north here for a 100-kilogram horse. I think that's a little small for him, eh? 100-kilo horse must be tiny, right?
Oh, man.
It's like a big dog.
My dog weighs 20 kilos, I think.
Jeez. Yeah.
Well, you do see
How is your dog doing?
Oh, Aggie? She's great.
Nice.
She's involved currently in a long, ongoing power struggle regarding the sofa.
Right, right.
So she understands that the ranking in the house goes me and Mrs. F, the kids, her, right? She understands that. She's the smallest one. The cat operates in a small fiefdom of her own upstairs. But for Aggie, the downstairs area, she just wants, like, she loves me and Mrs. F. She's fond of the girls. You know, she doesn't go as nuts for them as she does for me and Mrs. F. They do feed her most of the time, so she's starting to begrudging respect, and they do walk her and stuff like that. But you can just tell that then she's not as into them as she is into me and Mrs. F. Because she understands, on a dog level, that I sometimes tell my daughters off, and she's watching intently, like, oh, yes, moving up the ladder.
Yeah, right,
you know,
I see.
So in her mind, in her dog mind, Anytime I tell one of the kids off, that's bumped Aggie up a notch and the other one's gone down. So less food for her now and more for Aggie. That's how she sees it. So with the sofa, every evening when I come down after stream and I sit on the sofa and watch telly.
I just like this whole thing being like a fantasy castle realm setting.
It's very Game of Thrones in her little mind. So I sit on the sofa and she wants to sit next to me. And she lies lengthways next to my legs and she like snuggles in and she's like very happy and she looks up at me and I have to pet her. And when I stop petting her, she looks up at me sadly again. So I have to, basically this is like her time for for me to pet her on the sofa. She loves it. She's very happy. Sometimes one of the kids wants to sit with me. And, you know, I love cuddling my kids. So I'm sitting there with my daughter, one of my daughters watching the telly. Aggie looks horrified. This is like, oh, my God, I'm losing my position.
They're territorial, too, right?
Very.
Like, when they think that something's theirs or whatever, like they're
yeah.
They're
so she will sit there and stare. Or she'll get up on the sofa and look at my daughter and me with this sort of horrified look. And then she'll gradually try and creep. And if a gap opens up between us, it's like even an inch. She'll try and leap in there and like shove my door out of the way with her legs and stuff. It's I don't let her do it because I don't want
her
to.
Man, my daughter
think...
does that to my son now, right? And they're people. Like it's really weird. Yeah,
it's a mammal thing. We're social creatures.
We have these. Like my daughter's going through this phase now. Like she's five, so she's waking up in the night and she feels frightened. So she has to like you know come into our room and get into our bed, which is you know fine. Like we went through the whole thing with my son as well. But on the odd night, my son will come in as well. He'll hear the commotion. He'll come in too, and he'll be like, oh, you know, like I want to get in too. And then they'll actually have a full fight. Like, no, I was here first. There's not enough room for you. I need to get in there. And you're just like, it's fucking 3 a.m. Like, how do you guys have the energy for this? It's like, I'm like half comatose. Like, it's bad enough that one of them wants to get in there. And then,
this is how you end up sleeping in his bed and your wife ends up sleeping in her bed. And it's just like, you just switch places, right?
Listen, all parents or soon-to-be parents out there, the best advice I can give you is get your kids into like a single bed as soon as possible. As soon as they're like it's safe enough and comfortable enough for them to get into like a full size single bed, do it because it's like such a good backup. You know, like when your bed is like overflowing with extra people because of like frights in the night. Man, you've got like I've got my pick of single beds I can sleep in and get like a you know decent amount of shut eye. It's pretty good.
God, we never let the kids sleep in with us ever.
We've completely given up like in some ways because it's like you just spend all night back and forth. You know, like okay, are you like you're less frightened now? You're fine. Yeah. Okay. Go to sleep. See you in the morning. Great. Like 5 minutes later.
I remember this did happen and certainly my eldest never tried this because she's just kind of, she's always been, if she's got a problem, she'll keep it to herself for weeks until she suddenly realizes, she can't solve this. And then she'll come to you.
Right.
So she'll be like, 3 weeks ago, so-and-so said this. What do I do about that? And I'm like, well, what do you mean 3 weeks ago? What have you been doing since then? And she's very independent. She wants to try and solve it herself first, which is admirable.
Yeah,
but at the same time, sometimes it'll be something that, as an 11-year-old, I know she can't handle and she needs help.
Right.
And she won't seek it until she absolutely needs it, which I think, honestly, that'll serve her well in later life, being quite independent, solving problems on herself, not being helpless or whatever. I think that's awesome. But you got to look for help sometimes. My youngest is the opposite. So she'll just decide. So she goes through these phases where she decides she's had a nightmare and she needs to sleep in with me and Mrs. F. Sometimes we let her. She's pretty good. She'll stay quite still and go to sleep. My eldest, when she was a very little, she used to sometimes sleep in with us. Very kicky, very punchy, roly.
How my daughter's
shouty.
The same. She, it's like a wrestling match. Like,
it's awful.
It's fine like when she's just going to sleep, but once she's actually asleep. Oh my God.
It's
like, I woke up one time and I thought somebody was jumping on the bed. I turned over, she just like flailing. Like, but she was completely asleep. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, it's just,
crazy.
It's weird, right? They're just different. Like,
our
oldest is the same.
I always send
just
her back.
Like,
if I'm there, like if when I'm away, when I used to go away, like either I'd go down to Bristol or I'd go to Dover event or something, I'd be away for a week or two. One of the kids would always come in and sleep with Mrs. F because, you know, they're
I think
they're
that's
on,
a
and
pretty
also because
thing,
the,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not there. Mrs. F is like, you know, I'm happy with this because someone else is in here and it's nice.
And then you get to do the trick, especially when they're really young, you get back and you're like, who's been sleeping in my bed? Like you act like you're all pissed about it. And they're like, that wasn't me.
I love doing the scary dad stuff.
Game. I do it all the time.
Yeah, and they
still do it all the time. It's good.
Yeah,
it's
of great. Course. But isn't that my favorite part? Is they know it's a game, but they're also really scared.
Yeah.
I used to be scared. My dad did a thing with the oven glove where he would put on the oven. We had an oven glove that looked like a sort of a lizard. So it was like a lizard's head oven glove. It went all the way up your arm. And he would peek it around the door of the dining room from the kitchen. And I would just see this glove and I would be shrieking in terror. And this thing would be sort of opening its mouth at me and like looking all scary. And I was terrified. I was like, oh, daddy, no, my God. And looking back, it's like I knew it was him. And I was laughing, but I was also genuinely afraid of that thing.
Yeah.
Which was.
Yeah.
How does that happen? I mean, it wasn't like he'd put stuck blades on it or anything.
No.
Or there was any, like...
But I remember being really afraid. So, of course, I do that to my own kids, and they think it's hilarious.
It makes me worried, though, whether you are... I don't know where the line is up there, right? When are you just scared, like, traumatizing your kids?
No.
And when,
It's not like I'm waking them up at 4 a.m. with the oven glove.
It's not 3 o'clock, you're turning on the vacuum cleaner in their
keep
room.
Keep them out of your bed, though, right? They come into your bedroom, and the oven glove's there, and they're like, oh... You know, well, if they wake up scared, then again, maybe the oven glove is not a good way to keep scare out of your bed as well.
No.
I don't know. Anyway, shall we move on? Did you see the news that NASA had landed this thing on Mars this week?
I haven't actually caught up fully with the news, but yes, I was aware of it.
Oh, it's amazing. I watched the launch on stream because it's very tense, right? This has taken them years and... a lot of money and a lot of planning and a lot of science and everything. So what they did was incredible. And what it's going to do is also incredible. So this thing came into the atmosphere. And it was traveling at like 5 or 6 kilometers a second or something stupid like that. And hits the atmosphere and slows down. And then this huge parachute comes out. And as it's going down, it jettisons the parachute. And now it's got this sky crane thing, which is like this rocket-propelled landing craft that lowers the Perseverance down onto the ground. This thing is the size of a car, and it's all doing this.
Yeah, it's huge.
It just has to know. But as it's coming in, it does this radar scan of the ground and finds a landing site. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a bit bumpy. All right, we'll go for that bit. And aims for this bit where it's going to land. It's astounding. And it just had to do it all by itself because obviously with the, 10-minute difference... it depends on the orbit of Mars, I guess, but whatever the difference is, we don't know. We're just like, well, hope this goes okay. And it's either crashed or it hasn't by the time we find out. And then it's down and it immediately sends a picture. And then we've got videos and we've got sound and there's a little helicopter they're going to fly around. It's amazing. It is amazing.
It's wild.
They got a little drone. Yeah. Can you call a drone a mini helicopter? I suppose it's more than that.
What would you call it?
Well, I mean, it's called a drone. I think everyone knows what a drone is. Why are they calling it a mini helicopter?
I did.
Just for like dads who don't know what a drone is.
I think dads are the most likely to know what a drone is.
I feel like Perseverance is being called that because we've obviously had crashed ones before and stuff. And I feel like, you know, it's good to like finally get something down. But yeah, like I don't know, what's it going to do then? What's
look
the exciting
for,
stuff
think,
it's doing?
I think the
it's,
big thing it's,
it's actually
do is
collecting
for,
samples this time.
Yeah,
it's got
like
more
stuff,
scientific instrumentation on it where it is I think its primary goal is to try to discover if there was life on Mars at one point.
Yeah.
Which
so
I'm
gonna look.
I think they're pretty sure there was because the I think where they found evidence of water indicates that there's at least got to be some organisms that lived on the planet at some point,
which might be microbial life.
I don't know.
Yeah. So if they find it, like if they do find some microbial life, this would be the big one for me. Like I think this would be huge. Very unlikely. But let's say they found some that was still, they were able to somehow extract, not with this mission, but in the future, extract some DNA from one of these things somehow. Like if they found one that wasn't maybe even still alive down there in the ice, you never know. If the DNA was the same as Earth DNA, I think it would give us a really good idea of where life may have come from on the planet. Because one of the theories is that some comet came through and deposited organic life or matter or something, whatever the precursors were, on Earth, right? Like that might have been one of the things that led to life, was that there was some kind of comet seed. And if that was coming through the solar system and maybe it had been traveling for a long time and it gradually breaking up and part of it broke up and landed on Mars and part of it broke up and landed on Earth. So we sort of had a common thread begs all kinds of questions about where the life on that comet came from, of course, but it's possible. Might have been seeded by some alien race in the long ago. You never know.
Maybe.
Pretty nutty. Yeah. I mean, I've read some stuff saying that, what was it, Oumuamua, was that the name of it? The rock that came through a couple of years ago, came through the solar system. It was shaped like a cigar, basically. And some guy claims that that was almost certainly not
its destination was a anomaly in space that looked like Monica Lewinsky's Gucci.
Hey.
Oh my god.
Old joke for you there.
That's a Jay Leno joke. Probably looking for Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah, it was a Jay Leno joke.
That's all he fucking did for like 3 years.
That's fucking hilarious, man. Holy shit. It's fucking really interesting stuff. I love space. My wife hates space. She doesn't like to hear about it.
Mrs. F's the same. She's like,
she's like, I was telling her about something one time. She's like, will you lay off with like this fucking space shit? I don't want to hear this. Like,
I love it.
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't matter. That's the thing. It's like, it doesn't affect your life.
I mean, you know, I'm sure like some people would argue like, well, this affects all of us at some point technically, but you know, whatever. It's like, it doesn't really affect your day to day, I guess, is the point.
I love astronomy and all of this stuff and trying to figure out what's going on out there and what the hell it all is. Yeah. It's so weird. It's just so weird and like odd to think there's these vast spaces of nothingness with these burning hot balls of gas in them, and sometimes loads of different space objects. Yeah. Like, what? I think it's so weird.
Talk more about the burning hot balls.
It's just if you think about it, how weird it all is and how weird, like out of our, I like the distances are so enormous, and the fact that there could be, you know, other forms of life out there doing stuff, making giant things, or messing with physics, or God knows what they're doing, if they even are there. Oh, it's just so exciting and so much unknown, so much mystery.
There's nothing.
And
nothing near us. We're never going to see aliens, God damn it. It's a shame, but it's never going to happen. Never, never, never.
Well,
what if somebody invents, like in The Expanse, the guy that accidentally invented, like, the super hyper Mega Drive or whatever, you know? Like, you never know. I mean, you can't be too...
I mean, you can.
You can, yeah, you're right. You're right.
A friend of mine's a physicist, and we were talking about this, and it's like, the only thing that they could really... Like, there's no way to travel faster than the speed of light, right? It's impossible. And I was watching a video the other day about why that is, because I was like, what if you got that fast and just went 1 mile an hour faster, you know? What's going to stop you? And I think as they understand it, or as I understand it, which probably means I don't understand it, the problem is that the event and the causality would be out of sync. So you might, for example, have a collision and then see that collision later or something. And that fundamentally, that breaks some law of the universe.
So kind of like,
do leave a comment pointing out.
It's like imagine desync in Tarkov. It's like that.
It's like Tarkov desync, but with the speed of light and causality and cause and effect. So I think that would be an issue. And also there are also physical constraints on the fact that traveling that fast requires so much fucking energy. Like, even traveling at like 6% of the speed of light is insane, the amount of energy that requires and the amount of time and speed that you need to be going. So that's an issue. So the solution is that we don't actually, we cheat by not traveling, but sort of bending space or wormholes, which is a big one.
Right.
But we haven't seen a wormhole, have we? There's no evidence for wormholes. It just
feels pretty dodgy as well to start fucking with bending space. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can really screw some shit up. Like,
feels pretty scary stuff.
Well, here's the thing. You've heard about Planet X or whatever it's called, right? I'm not talking about that ridiculous, what is it called, Nibiru shit where there's an exoplanet headed here. What they're saying is that the way that the outer planets, so Pluto and whatever the other shitty dwarf planets that nobody cares about in the suburbs of the solar system out there, those ones, that their axis of rotation and their sort of orbits cannot be explained unless you put another planet with a mass 10 times the Earth out in the distant orbit of the sun. That if we put one there, it explains it all. but we can't see it, and it's very hard to find it. So one of the things is that it might be very hard to find because it's not a planet, but a small black hole. So it would be about the size of an orange, and it would have a mass 10 times the size of the Earth at that size. And I'm thinking, because I've been playing Stellaris lately, my first thought was, so when we unlock the black hole wormhole technology, luckily, our solar system comes equipped with a miniature black hole. Perfect.
All we need to do is miniaturize ourselves down to the size of an orange, and then we'll be able to walk through.
Okay. So, complete change of subject here.
Mm-hmm.
But I was watching a film called Witness, which is a Harrison Ford film, 80s film, very good movie, about a guy who, he's a cop. It's about a bunch of corrupt cops. And this little kid, this little Amish kid, witnesses a murder when he's on a trip to Baltimore, and then he has to be protected by Harrison Ford because the corrupt police know they were the ones who did the murder, sort of thing. So he has to go live with the Amish for a while. And one of the ways he kills one of the guys in the film, spoiler alert, but it's a fucking nearly a 50-year-old movie, so fuck you, he dumps a load of grain on this guy in a silo. And I was like, man, that's going to be a way to go. Right. Grain.
That's a very Amish way to go, I think.
It is.
So
I Googled about dying in a grain silo, and the first result was grain entrapment / engulfment. And then I started reading all about this and articles about this. And here's the thing. When they store grain in a silo, and it can be any kind of grain, not just like wheat or whatever, but any kind of grain. Corn is a very common one. They stack it up in the silo, and when they're putting it in there, you want to pack it down because it doesn't settle. Like, it's not like water where it just automatically finds the lowest level. It's all little bubbles of stuff, and they all get stuck together and everything like that.
So you have to like vibrate it till it turns into like a liquid.
Well, no, you go and stomp up and down on it.
Is that right?
That's the budget way of doing it.
Oh, brilliant. Okay?
So one of the problems is sometimes you get moisture, obviously getting into the silo. It's not airtight, a lot of them. And that causes a sort of crust of grain on top. And when you're stamping on the grain to sort of get it down, that can break and you can become engulfed in the grain. So there might be a void in the grain below that where you're jumping up and down moves that, unsettles the grain, and you're suddenly getting sucked into it like quicksand. So the grain acts a little bit like a liquid and then it kind of flows and all the rest of it. But it's also quite different. The pressure is very strange. If you get into the grain up to your knees, just up to your knees, with some difficulty, you'll be able to extract yourself. Okay. Any higher than that, up to the waist, you're going to need another person, at least one other person to help you. And any higher than that, and it's a full on rescue, special equipment, everything like that.
Right.
Just up to your neck in grain, they won't be able to get you out. Because if you know, it's like digging in dry sand, you try and move the grain, of course, more just flows in. So they have this big tube of metal that they put around you and they build it in parts, so it's like a four-stage thing, and they push that down into the grain, then they dig the grain out, and then they can pull you out, and then the grain flows back. But I was like, damn, how bad would it be to die suffocating in it in grain?
Well, any suffocation drowning would just be horrendous, right?
But it's grain, so it feels wholesome and natural. You see little Quaker Oats guy on the side of the box. There's Tony the Tiger.
There's people out there probably recommending grain baths.
Yeah,
probably.
Take a grain bath. That's Gwyneth fucking thing. Paltrow's shoving a pussy full of grain every chance
she
gets.
Jesus Christ, Flex.
Well, does that help you stay buoyant in the grain or not, though?
A PU55Y full of grain.
This I don't know if you guys have seen this on Netflix. It was the documentary about that Canadian girl that went traveling to the US and disappeared from the Cecil Hotel, and
Elisa Lam, her name,
and then
was
found dead in one of the water tanks on the roof of the hotel.
Oh yeah,
that's a bit of a spoiler, but I mean, yeah. So Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel, it's called on Netflix, and I thought it was a bit of a weak documentary because it had so many fucking YouTubers and
all these people
I couldn't wait to go to the hotel and stay there.
Yeah,
oh, and look at where she
parts
died.
Parts of it weren't great. The story itself is really, really interesting and a bit creepy.
Yeah,
I think it could have been two episodes
creepy,
probably, with a combination of episodes 1, 2, and 4. And I think they could have just left episode 3 out. It was just too weird with the whole like internet sleuth angle and stuff. But overall, though, I enjoyed it. Like, I wasn't familiar with the story, and I was creeped out by it as well.
It's one of the famous stories because of the fact that the police released this quite odd video of her behaving very erratically.
Yeah. I remember this from the.
It's really sad though, because she was bipolar. She was on a lot of medication for it. She had episodes episodes of psychosis like previously. And I think her family were sort of like, you know, helpful with it, but didn't really want many people to know that that was the case and stuff. And like when you sort of look at it, you piece it all together. And certainly the conclusion they came to was that, you know, she was under medicating at the time. She had a history of sort of doing that as well, and then disappearing, or, you know, thinking that she was seeing things and stuff. And if you look at like the footage of her in the elevator, it looks like she's talking to somebody that's not there. And people were convinced that there was somebody there and that somebody murdered her. But when you look at it, like, oh my God, to murder somebody and then carry them up to the top of a water tank and dump the body in there and stuff, like, there's just no evidence that any of that happened. And it's just, I think it's just I think nobody wants to just accept that it's just a really sad story of, you know, somebody with a diminished mental health at that time sort of thing, even though there was medication and help available. It's just really sad. I mean, she's 21 years old.
So basically, like, yeah, it was kind of interesting because it's similarity to the grain silo thing that, you know, once she climbed into this water tower for whatever reason, she just couldn't get out.
No.
And so she sort of almost like paradoxically took all her clothes off thinking that would help her stay afloat and that would let her climb out more easily. But it didn't. And she drowned in there, unfortunately.
But it's that mundanity of grain or a water tower or whatever that makes it scary.
It doesn't sound that dangerous either. Like if you were just a teenager messing around, you know, exploring a building, you got to the roof and there was a water tower, you might think, fuck it, I'll jump in and it's really hot or whatever, you know, it's like a swimming pool, it must be interesting and weird and stupid, and you don't realize sometimes what you've... So I can see, like, the angle of that. I think that the fact that it did happen in this very terrible area meant that people assumed some sketchy guy had, abducted her,
Skid Row is not, like, the best place to be. Like, I know, like, you know, cities are changing and, you know, there's probably some gentrification that's happened there or whatever, and they're trying to... you know, revitalize like that downtown area. But this is an area of LA that's known for just being, you know, very, very, very poor, very drug infested, violence, you know, like it's kind of a dumping ground for the sort of unwanteds of society, right?
Like, well, also that's where a lot of the shelters are.
Yeah.
And so they end up getting bused to that area to go to the shelters, and then they get let out of the shelters, so they end up there on the streets around that area.
Yeah.
So it is historically, there's lots of reasons why it's such a big problem.
Yeah.
And it's always been a problem. It's always been a poor area.
Yeah.
It's tough. We've seen it. We've been to San Francisco and Los Angeles, and we've seen these districts. Like, is it Tenderloin in San Francisco where there's a lot of
homeless people,
and it's really kind of really you suddenly, and it's strange. It's what we always talk about, how strange it is, how strange America is, where you can just suddenly take a wrong turn. And I'm sure there's areas like it in London as well,
The same level. I've never been scared in parts of London. I mean, there are some council estates I've been on, or there was one I lived on for a while that I was like, this is a shithole, and I was like worried, but it wasn't like I've been to places in the States where I'm literally like, we need to get the fuck out of here, like this is bad. It's very different there.
So I mean, there's this true crime sort of boom on Netflix really, and these places I watch all of these things, and I really like them, and they're really interesting stories, murder stories. They're huge podcasts as well, like I listen to some podcasts that are huge podcasts that are they're very murder porn, though. They're very like,
they are
misery
porn. My big thing at the moment is disasters, because I did actually get down a bit of a rabbit hole and started reading about more, and I've got three more for you if you want.
Disasters.
And they get worse. Okay. They get progressively worse. And the final one sounds like a cartoon, honestly. It's so ridiculous. So the first one I looked at was the Capron disaster, which was at a ski resort. I'd never heard of any of these, by the way. The Capron disaster was a train that's like pulled by a cable at a ski resort, and it goes up through this tunnel in the mountain to the top, and a fire broke out on the train in the tunnel. As 155 people died on this train because they couldn't get out, and there's like the fire melted the radio so they couldn't call for help.
Oh,
and there was another train coming down the tunnel while they were going up, and a load of people on that one died of smoke inhalation and everything. And it was like this toxic smoke just killing people. I think about 10 or 15 people managed to escape by smashing windows at the back with their ski poles and then running down the tunnel. And I was like, God, that's fucking awful. Like, you would not expect that at all.
Not in the year 2000.
At a ski resort of all places? This is like a luxury place to be,
you just
right?
think you they know what's going on.
I guess it was the same with the Titanic, though. I mean...
Right, exactly.
People are on a luxury cruise liner.
There was a lot of hubris around the Titanic. But... it's unsinkable. I would never have got on a ship that they claimed was unsinkable in a million fucking years. That's just asking for trouble,
that's asking for karma to get you, isn't it?
So then there was the Salang tunnel fire in Afghanistan. During the Soviet-Afghan war, there was this fire in a tunnel. A lot of tunnel fires.
So that Capran disaster thing happened in 2000. I mean, I'm surprised I've never heard about it, but also relatively modern, right? I was going skiing in that sort of time, and it felt like these places were very...
very crisp and clean.
It felt like it wouldn't happen in Austria.
Right.
No, yeah.
I mean, you could imagine that happening in some terrible ski resort down in the middle of nowhere, like
airliners that crash and stuff. You know, like they're few and far between, but when they happen, you realize, holy crap! Like, I've been to places before, and I've never thought twice about going on public transportation or going into a building or you know, whatever. You just take for granted that these places are safe, and you never even think about it. I can't imagine how fucking scared they would have
been. There was one in Bangladesh, I think it was Bangladesh, and it was like one of those buildings that's like got a mall in it and offices and shops and all the rest of it, and the whole fucking thing just collapsed.
Oh my God.
They'd seen some cracks in it, and a bunch of people had said, I'm not going in, and a bunch of offices had closed, but there were a bunch of other things like garment factory or something in there, and they were just like, yeah, crack on, it's just some cracks. And the whole thing just fell, blam, and killed a whole bunch of people.
Jesus.
That's the kind of thing, like, you could be there on fucking holiday and a building falls on you, like, or, you know, you could be working day in, day out in some miserable clothes factory.
Yeah.
And you're forced to go into work and the fucking building falls on you. So those are awful.
I see cracks on the side of every building.
These were big cracks.
A couple of years ago in Montreal, there was like a highway overpass that collapsed.
Yeah.
I can't remember if anybody was hurt or killed.
It's
in
a
it,
big
but
problem in America, you know.
That's nuts, though, to think that you just, you know, on any given day, you're just driving home on that highway and then an overpass collapses. Jesus Christ.
Five people were killed in that, by the way.
Yes, the Salang tunnel fire in Afghanistan was the Soviets have not really, in very typical Russian fashion, or the Soviet fashion anyway, they have not released specific details. They're like, oh, it was just an accident. The Afghans were claiming that they set off a bomb in the tunnel, and this was like a chain reaction of things exploding. And to make it worse, the Soviets put tanks at either end of the tunnel because they thought some insurgents might get out that had started this. So no one was allowed to leave. And there's smoke everywhere. Cars are exploding. It's like a chain reaction.
Jesus.
People are trying to get out and they can't get out. And I thought, that sounds fucking awful. But then I hit on the MV Donya Paz.
Oh no. What is this? This is like disaster top trumps.
I know. The MV Donya Paz has the cake. All right.
This was a passenger ferry
laden with people, and it collides with an oil tanker. This is over, I think, in the Philippines or something.
Oh
like
my
that.
God.
Collides with an oil tanker.
So when is this? 1987, it says. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
So the MV Donya Paz passenger ferry. There's no radio on board. They've locked away the life jackets. The crew has no idea what they're doing. And the ship is massively overloaded with people.
Right.
Crashes into this oil tanker, starts to sink. The oil tanker's going down as well. Fire breaks out. The ocean is on fire. And people have to jump off the ship into the burning ocean, which is also shark infested.
Oh, my.
This is so awful.
That is
awful. It's so bad. And it just, I was just reading this, and every time it was adding another layer onto it, I was like, oh man, yeah, that sucks. And the water caught fire. I was like, well, that's fucking bad. And it was shark infested. I was like, what the fuck? Like, this is like a cartoon. This is horrible. So that was the worst one that I could find, because it just felt like everything went wrong. And you could imagine people like, we'll put on the life jackets. Oh, we've locked them away and we can't find the key. Why have the lights gone out? Because we're incompetent. Let's call for help. The radio's broken and we haven't got one anyway. Whoa! just how fucking awful can you get?
4,000 people, 4,500 people were on board. Only 25 people survived.
Oh my God.
It's unbelievable.
That is such a disaster.
Man,
how have we not heard of this? I
really don't want to like, oh man, maybe I shouldn't. I was just going to say though, imagine like sharks had a society where they were able to like recount like tales of stuff that happened or whatever. That
you guys remember Donya Pass? Oh, those were the good days.
I don't want to. I mean, I feel terrible for
those stupid humans. There were 4,000 of them piled onto a boat, just like a sushi platter for us.
Sake.
Biggest barbecue these shark waters I've ever seen. Oh,
God. Fuck's sake. Oh, that's horrific. That is horrific. Jesus.
It's awful.
Oh, no.
But so if you go looking, you'll find all of these. And they're always like, here we still talk about, what was that one? The Potter's Bar crash, train crash a few years ago. People still talk about that. And we talk about, you know, crash. I mean, obviously, if we take terrorist attacks out of the equation, sure, when it comes to disasters, they tend to live long in our memory if they're local. But they also tend not to have, like, 1,000 people dying or whatever. Whereas when you go to other parts of the world where the laws are a lot more lax, safety standards are much less, this kind of shit happens all the time. And in the past, it used to happen in Britain and in America. We'd get, like, there was one in, I can't remember, it might have been San Francisco, it might have been, no, it was Texas Bay or Dallas Bay or something. Some ship laden with ammonium nitrate comes into the harbor and it's on fire and they're trying to put it out and it's got all these, they do all this wrong stuff and the whole fucking thing blows up. A bit like happened in, was it Lebanon recently?
Oh,
was
yeah.
Was it Beirut?
God,
Beirut,
that was unbelievable.
That ship blew up. So it's like that. That kind of thing used to happen in America and in Britain before we brought in all these safety standards. And it pisses me off when I read about this stuff because people are like, health and safety got mad, and oh. But the reason we have it is because we've been through this shit and they don't have it. And now you've got people jumping into shark-infested waters to be barbecued.
Well, I feel like what this is just, again, the psychology of humans, right? It's where people, when nothing happens, it's people get laxer and laxer with the rules. They become complacent until something happens that goes wrong.
Yeah,
and then
they're
everyone,
like, "Whose fault was this?"
And then everyone fixes it.
Yeah, it's funny to think that, like, where we're at now with all of the guidelines and the investigations and everything, you know, health and safety. All of that had to come about from off the back of people getting into accidents or there being disasters or people dying, right? Because otherwise, nobody's really going to forward think most of that.
Right.
Some of it is, of course, but like for the most part,
it's off the back of
just like human sacrifice to make everybody else somewhat safer.
Yeah.
Well, everything, like even like from like the Challenger disaster or like Aberfan where they had the coal mine slip and in Wales, like all of these disasters have led to very quick and immediate outrage and action to change practices, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, often, you know, the flight industry is one of the safest in the world. Oh, those heady pre-COVID days where we would fly around the world and visit places. But they were very, and they still are, very, very diligent and very, like, obsessed with accidents. And I think it's because the idea of a plane accident has been so glamorized and dramatized in people's minds. A lot of people still feel that plane travel is dangerous, when in fact it's the safest form of travel by some margin. I think a lot of people feel like they won't get hit crossing the road, but that's like the most likely time you're going to be killed by a car. You know, it's one of the things that we've surrendered our you know, a lot of our land, especially in cities. So these very dangerous places. I've almost been hit by this car zoomed through a junction like the other day, like just some crazy, I don't know why, like zoomed through a junction right in front of me, like through a red light. And, you know, if I wasn't paying attention and I was just sort of blithely meandering across the road, I could have been killed.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone has experienced that, right, at some point on a road. I think that they're super, super dangerous. So watch out, guys out there, even in this post COVID world where there's supposed to be no one on the streets, it's still dangerous.
Yeah,
watch out, look after yourselves. So I've been watching a lot of like kind of stuff with like the kind of rose tinted nostalgia goggles of COVID, like, because I've been watching two things this week. I watched a bit more Superstore, which is this terrible kind of. It's on Netflix now.
Is it any good?
It looks really bad. Yeah,
it's not great. The first season's not great, but it picks up a little bit. And I have been watching.
What's a little bit of not great though? It can't be worth watching.
Then again, I'd rather watch like some light-hearted comedy thing that's not very good than some miserable fucking murder drama.
Yeah, I don't think it's healthy to watch. I get recommended murder stuff because I've watched a couple. I watched what is it called? Was it The Staircase?
Staircase was really interesting.
That was great. Yeah. And I watched the one about the guy Stephen something or other.
Stephen Avery making a murder.
Yeah. That was really good. Yeah. I watched the one about the Night Hunter.
That was upsetting.
Yeah. I watched those three. I don't really watch a lot of true crime stuff because it feels lurid to me and kind of like pulpy, you know?
It is.
Some of them are really bad.
Some of them are bad.
And like revel in it. I don't want to watch the one about Peter Sutcliffe and all. I don't want to watch anything about the fucking Fred and Rosemary West. I don't want to see all this stuff.
Some of it feels pretty seedy and gross. And yeah, anyway, I had enough of it. So I watched that, and I also watched The Flight Attendant, which is this TV show with the woman from The Big Bang Theory, which I haven't watched all of. What's her name? Penny from Big Bang Theory?
No idea.
Did you watch it?
I don't think I've ever watched a single episode of that show.
Okay.
And I'm grateful for
watched,
it as well.
I watched a few minutes of it, and it's so fucking awful, and I hate all the characters.
It's terrible, but you should know who the characters
I don't.
Are.
I'm actually pleased to announce I couldn't name one of them. Fuck that show.
I know they say Bazonga. Bazonga! Isn't that one of the things
Bazinga.
On the show?
Yeah,
whatever. And I know that there's one of the girls who's very clever, and she's very clever in real life. She's played by the girl who was Blossom, for anyone that grew up in the 80s.
I remember
Blossom was a popular TV show. And then there's the fit one. That's all I know.
She's the fit one. Yeah. Okay. So she's in this... I guess now she's loaded because that's what happens to people who are in an incredibly popular sitcom when they get paid hundreds of thousands of pounds.
I believe
per
it's
episode.
The most successful sitcom of all time, by the way. I'm pretty sure.
What, Blossom?
Which is, yeah, no.
Big Bang
Fucking
Theory.
Big Bang Theory.
It probably would be. Oh, no, but I mean, Seinfeld's got to still be top, right?
Dude, I'm pretty sure it's.
In terms of money gross, syndication and stuff? Seinfeld's
big,
been
though.
Around longer. I'd say Fresh Prince has probably made more money and been around much longer than Big Bang Theory.
So Friends and the Big Bang Theory.
Friends, of course. Jesus Christ.
Friends and the Big Bang Theory. So did you know Frasier's coming back?
I heard somebody say something about this.
They're rebooting it.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I really enjoyed watching The Flight Attendant. It felt like this time when The Flight Attendant, it was nice. It's like a nice pre-COVID like mouthwash. I don't know. It felt like a kind of, I don't know. Like I just worry that the world's different now, and I'm scared.
You gotta watch Ted Lasso, Lewis. You'll like it. I can't get it. You can sign up to Apple TV Plus for a month for free, and you can watch that in like 2 days.
I don't want to because fuck Apple.
Okay, but anyway, I mean, if you're looking for something lighthearted actually good, Ted Lasso is a good shout for sure.
Okay,
good shout.
Oh, here's another one for you. Schitt's Creek.
I've seen that, but I haven't watched it. Like, I've seen it on Netflix.
Mrs. F converted me to it. She was like, the first couple of episodes, you won't be super into it. But
this
now,
is how
I
felt
love
too.
This show. Like, it is, Schitt's Creek is so fucking funny. The characters are brilliant.
It's got all the old SCTV
really
guys in it, right? Like
really
Eugene
has.
Levy
yeah.
and Carol,
yes.
Carol whatever.
Is it O'Hara?
O'Hara, Catherine O'Hara.
She's brilliant. But honestly, I really, really recommend Schitt's Creek. There are some of the episodes are just hilarious, and it's just the characters are so good. And her character Moira is so fucking good. She's like this. She used to be an actress. So the setup is that they were a very wealthy family, laid low by the IRS, who've taken all their money away, and now they've gone to the only place that they have, which is that they bought this town, Schitt's Creek. The father bought it because he thought it was funny. He just bought it as a joke for his son. But they actually do own the town.
Right.
So
and then they have to go
they
live
go,
there.
But they still have no money. But they sort of go there and they find that, you know, things are kind of busted there.
It's
like
such
a very
an American concept that you can...
Buying a town. Yeah,
I don't even know where that... How I think maybe that is even like not a thing.
But... I think it is. But anyway, you should go watch it. It's very funny.
We just finished watching a bunch of stuff and we were looking for something new to watch. And I've got a Now TV subscription because I used it to watch like Game of Thrones when it was on and a bunch of other stuff. And that's just how I can get like access to HBO stuff over here too.
Oh yeah. God.
I was looking around for something to watch and I saw True Detective season 3. And I was like, okay, I loved season 1. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. Season 1 was great.
Season 2 I was not fond of. I thought it was pretty bad. And
the script was so bad.
Yeah. And so I thought, you know, 3 could be good, but might be bad, but let's try it out anyway. Man, we were hooked. Like, kids went to school. We watched 4 episodes in one day. Like, it was yeah, it was one of those shows. It was just like, bam, it was great. Really, really enjoyed it. I can highly recommend it. Season 3, it's a bit like season 1 in terms of quality.
Okay.
Story is not like identical, but like there's similarities and there's a tie back in it to season 1 as well, which is kind of cool.
You know, in season 1, it what blew my mind, like I love that show, like you, I absolutely love that show.
Yeah.
I thought that the characters, like I thought Matthew McConaughey was so good.
Oh, he was so
Woody
good.
Harrelson was so
yeah,
good.
Yeah, both.
I love the characters. I love the setting. I love what they were trying to uncover. Yeah. I thought it was such a good mystery.
Yeah.
You know, at the end, when he looks and he sees stars in that thing, like the guy actually is fucking summoning some kind of portal of some kind. Do you remember that
I
bit?
I don't remember that bit, no.
When do you remember they go to confront him and they're fighting the big guy who's like the leader?
I remember
of it
that
all.
Not liking that bit at the end, like the very end of season 1, where it was like they were in like that creepy haunted house maze and stuff. And I just thought, whatever, like I get it, it's a show, and like the rest of the show more than makes up for the fact that this scene isn't actually that great and not really the best way to end the show on this season.
It's very standard kill the bad guy and
which
final level.
So season 3 seemed to almost lead up to something like that, and I was a bit worried that it was going to be kind of the same, and then was pleasantly surprised. The way season 3 works is kind of the same as season 1. It's a lot of it is retrospective, so like it's they're older, they've moved on, but this case haunts them and they have to talk about it. But there's 3 different timelines. There's like the case when it happens in 1980 and the detectives that are working it. And then in 1990, 10 years later, there's a whole bunch of threads of story about the aftermath of the case, when they moved on and stuff. And then much further on, 2015, they're like old ass men. They're in their 70s. They've got, you know, grown kids, you know, whatever. And that's when, like, you know, it goes on all that time. And then in 2015 is kind of when they finally start to figure out what's going on, sort of thing.
Right.
But it's really, really well done. It's really well written. It's really interesting. It keeps you hooked. You know, you just like, same as season 1, you know, like the, just the theme of it, like the acting is phenomenal. Like, oh man, it's so good. I can't recommend it enough, actually. Like, it's really worth a watch. It's not,
do you know
it's
what,
not
do you know
too
the
upsetting either, you know? It's not like, it's not so dark that it's like unwatchable or anything.
Before
like
we
that.
I actually have to go. Sorry, but I've got a meeting. Sorry, but if we could just put a pin on
this. Is this not a meeting?
Yeah, this is a meeting of minds.
Residents Association.
Yeah.
It's about those pigeons.
He's got to talk about seagulls.
All right. Has he gone?
Oh my god.
Yeah, he left.
All right, well, there you go. Thank you everyone for listening to the podcast this week.
Yep.
We'll see you all next week. Stay safe.
Stay
out
safe.
There.
Stay safe. Be careful.
Lots of love.
Goodbye.
See you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.